the final chapter.
All endings are arbitrary. A neatly resolved three-act narrative is designed to conclude by teaching us a lesson or imparting meaning, conjuring catharsis. The good folks prevail, the baddies are punished, and the hero rides into the sunset having conquered the monster. In real life, we rarely get that closure, and even if we appear to, it's never quite as satisfying as one would hope. The tales of our lives are messy and full of loose threads that we ultimately just have to snip or tuck away so they don't drive us mad. Time is fluid. It's an ever-flowing stream. And when we piece together a story, we're only just panning a bit of water from the stream to see what we can find. Metal and minerals, sticks and stones. We can assign them milestones like beginning, middle, and end. But when the sediment eventually returns to the stream, it all washes together once more. This is our last episode about our time in Connor Creek, so we'll try to lay out everything we know and tie it together as best we can. But like life, if you're looking for a nice, tidy ending, you're not going to find one here. From the American Podcasting Network, this is The Wayward Guide for the Untrained Eye. I'm Artemis Shuhorn.
And I wrote 50% of that appalling intro. I'm Paul Shuhorn.
It was pretty bleak, huh?
Yeah, just a touch.
I hope we don't get a bunch of angry hate mail after this whole story airs.
Oh, Artie. Of course we're gonna get angry emails. But like I said back in Chapter 3, it's about the journey, not the destination.
And our journey in Connor Creek ended at the Minor Mole offices.
We thought we made sense of the town's werewolf conundrum by connecting the killings directly to Silas Torson. But when we arrived, Silas, like the previous victims, had already been gruesomely murdered. And sadly, he wasn't the only casualty that night.
In the lobby of Minor Mole lay three more mutilated bodies. Rocky, Cliff, and Jewel Irons.
Now, I know everyone is listening to this true crime story like it's pulpy and full of kooky characters, but those were real people with real lives. Jewel was only 16 years old.
It's unclear if the Irons family were targeted in the same way Silas was, or merely innocent victims unfortunately placed in the killer's path. After the discovery, the rest of the night passed in a blur, questioning, autopsies, and confusion. And despite our efforts to crack the case, it turned out that our conclusions were just a fraction of the larger story. The full truth of that night's events seemed to die with Silas. But as the investigation wrapped over the next few days, we were able to obtain a few answers that shed light on the true villain of this story.
In true corporate criminal fashion, Silas had actually bugged his own office. This way he had collateral in case he needed to drag his corroborators down with him. These tapes provided hours of damning evidence detailing extortion, bribery, and an all-around lack of moral character.
I guess we were right about a few things.
Okay, listen, Frankie. Can I call you Frankie? All right, Frankie. Look, I know you're about to turn in the Q3 reports to the board of directors, but before you do, you should know that I may have told them that everything is on track a little prematurely. That's because it would be on track. Yo, if the council here wasn't up my ass with regulations, you know, I was just thinking it would be such a shame if, you know, for your reports to paint this grim and gloomy picture when that's all going to be behind us so very soon.
I don't think I should.
I get it. Yeah, but, Frankie, I just have one more question. Have you ever seen Pitbull live?
Here's the thing, Barney. I am giving you the honor of running Modern Mole ad for the next 3 weeks. There is no dollar amount I could give you that's comparable to all the business our expansion is going to bring you.
Yeah, but I got bills.
Those aren't my problem. No more excuses, Fletcher. 3 weeks.
This Reynolds kid has been picking it out front every day this week. Can you make him go away now?
Let him wave his little signs and chant his slogans. I'll take care of him when we're closer to election day. Patience.
Damn. You sure know how to blue ball a man, Hensley. Truth be told, I got a kink for that sort of thing. So if we're talking next steps for this partnership...
We had no idea that in addition to supporting Truman as a candidate, Silas had recruited her to do his dirty work.
I would have never pegged her as a killer.
Well, I guess this was an instance where we thought her bark was worse than her bite. But her bite was, in fact, fatal.
Yeah. Hell yeah! The Torchmeister wins again. All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Excuse me. I think you still owe me a proper thank you. Because you haven't done anything. I was the one who secured your permits and silenced another member of the opposition.
The mailman? Shit, Truman, don't you think that was overkill? I mean, it literally was overkill. But you know what? It's time. Let's call off the dogs.
Cute. Now let's codify next steps. I have some ideas on the future of our working relationship.
These incriminating calls connected Truman to nearly every murder in the town, including Silas's. For those where a direct connection can't be made, the evidence leans strongly in favor of her guilt.
It seemed like her intentions lined up with Silas. Take control of the town council to free up the mining restrictions. But after winning the election, they seemed to deviate. It was clear to us that with her new office and expanded power, Truman was now pulling the strings.
Also clear? Truman was the werewolf.
Well, in a way. As the strange events in Connor Creek unraveled at the end of our visit, it became apparent that there never was an actual werewolf. Much to Paul's disappointment.
Much to my relief, honestly. I've seen enough monsters to last me a lifetime.
Truman had turned the townsfolk against each other through manufactured werewolf hysteria and by manipulating their fear.
Well, and pharmaceuticals.
The sheriff's office of Connor Creek... I guess that's just me. Yeah. Can confirm that we discovered complete blueprints of our town's irrigation and water filtration system at Truman campaign headquarters. Which indicates that, well, Truman had been tampering with the town's water supply.
Wow. Okay. And what about the LSD you mentioned before?
Yes.
Yes. What?
Yes, LSD was present in large amounts at our campaign headquarters. Yes, it was.
Which means...
We are unable to comment further at this time about this ongoing investigation. Sorry.
Truman had been releasing potent psychedelics into Connor Creek's water supply the whole time, which totally sounds like something out of my favorite movie, Detective Dark Begins. She was trying to control the werewolf narrative by increasing the dosages at calculated intervals.
And it worked. The staged murders, the suggestion of werewolves, and the ongoing drug exposure turned Connor Creek into a cauldron of fear and aggression.
Aside from the horrific loss of life and permanent scars inflicted on the town, it's honestly the most punk rock thing I've ever seen in my life.
Really, Paul?
I'm kidding! This episode has been so morbid so far!
Yeah, the toxicology reports indicates lots of drugs, 100%, or 0.001%. Who cares? This is a fun time, you know what I mean? We like to party in Connor Creek, but not me. No, not me. I gotta stay sober, especially when I'm on the crock, you know? You gotta say no to drugs, kids. Come on, say it with me now. No to drugs. Booze is not a drug, right?
With all this shocking evidence laid out before us, we're still left asking, why?
Of all the tactics she could have employed, why werewolves?
Think about it. There's nothing scarier than your neighbor, someone you interact with daily, maybe even someone you love and respect. Secretly having a dark side. By something as innocuous as the light of the moon, they can turn into an uncontrollable monster and attack you.
There was also poetic justice in it all, seeing as Connor Creek's own mythos was populated with stories of werewolves. The seed of belief was there to begin with, buried deep in the locals' hearts and minds, and Truman merely created the conditions for the monsters to manifest.
But even beyond that, why was Truman hellbent on dividing and dismantling this peaceful town? Why did she arrange such a Machiavellian scheme to wreak this chaos? And why, when she seemed to finally be on top, did she disappear into the night?
With Silas dead and Truman vanished, We'll probably never know the answers to these questions. We like to believe that our presence was a major catalyst in stopping her master plan. But yeah, we'll never know.
We're always panning for precious nuggets of story that we can build from. And more often than not, we end up with a lot of dirty river rocks. But as we press forward, the water from the stream washes away the sediment, sometimes revealing a glimmer beneath the grime. We now had the clarity to see what had been buried just below the surface in Connor Creek this whole time. Paranoia and prejudice. Fear was the real monster, waiting to rear its ugly, fanged head at the first sign of a threat. And we all know how the town reacted when faced with their own fears. It didn't matter that the werewolf wasn't real. They still turned on one another, nearly destroying the community they were so desperately trying to protect. Sitting here weeks later, in the comfort of APN headquarters, I'm still digesting the events that went down in Connor Creek.
Over the course of 1 week, we had witnessed 8 deaths.
The mining executive, Silas Torson.
Husband and wife, Cliff and Rocky, and their teenage daughter, Jewel.
Barney Fletcher, the dino egg enthusiast.
Odie Doty, the mailman.
Prism, the town mystic.
And our initial source.
The man who started it all, Ryan Reynolds.
Why they had to die was a question that would never get answered, and that was frustrating to accept. So we were left searching for some kind of silver lining in all of this.
During the post-production process of Wayward Guide, I've spent hours and hours at my desk racking my brain for meaning, all the while absent-mindedly playing with the silver keychain that Ryan gave me. It's a soothing distraction, and one of the only souvenirs I have to remind me of Connor Creek, a small silver trinket engraved with the town motto, "Good Enough."
Ryan had sent it to us nestled in an edible arrangement. I almost choked on it.
Attached to the keychain is a key. Always the paranoid type, and turns out for good reason, Ryan had sent us a lockbox of documents a week after the edible arrangement.
At the beginning of our investigation, the collection of odds and ends in the box didn't really help us much. It all seemed pretty random. But after spending time in Connor Creek, we now saw the contents in a different light. It was a box of memories. A worn photo from when Aubrey won the Founders Day pie-eating contest. A newspaper clipping from when Prism correctly predicted their annual snowfall. The minutes from the mayor's inaugural address to the town. Snippets of happier times for Connor Creek.
There was also a scrap of paper on which Ryan had jotted down some thoughts on his platform for town council. We only had limited interactions with Ryan before his passing, so our first impression of him was fairly one-dimensional. Revisiting his thoughts revealed a simple wisdom that we had initially overlooked. Ryan Reynolds for Connor Creek Town Council. Don't undermine our town.
Folks who haven't spent much time in Connor Creek, they may believe that there isn't much to it. It's just a tiny speck in the history of California. But they're wrong, you know. We may not be rich in gold, but we are rich in spirit. The people here don't just want to be good. They want to be good enough. Well, how good is enough? Who's to say? And that's the beauty of it all. It's an ongoing, ever-reaching goal. It's never quite achievable. We're constantly asking ourselves to redefine what it means to be a Connor Creekian. Now, some may say that's a foolish notion to have dreams that are out of reach, but isn't that the whole point of progress? That you can never reach the finish line because, well, there isn't one at all. Progress means different things to different folks. To some people, it means exploiting our public resources for personal gain. To some others, it means sacrificing the character of our entire beloved community for the promise of jobs for a few. And for some others, it means valuing capital and property over the lives and dignity of our neighbors. But that kind of progress isn't good enough for our town. Now, I've been hearing the phrase, never settle, getting tossed around a lot lately. And on the surface, yes, my opponent's slogan implies progress. It appears to share the pursuit of that which is never quite achievable. But it's also loaded with cynicism. It suggests that there's always something lacking, something to gain, no matter what the cost, that our people weren't even good enough to begin with. But I know, from living in Connor Creek my entire life, that the people here are extra special. so sure, Miss Hensley. Let's move forward together. Let's. But let's do it while keeping our collective interests at heart. In Connor Creek, we may not have big industry, sensible street names, or the latest Palm Pilot, but we have one another. And having each other's backs, well, that'll always be enough.
Even when it's not obvious at first, life's tragedies can have a silver lining. It just might require you to look closer and try a different perspective before it'll catch the light.
Revisiting Ryan's idealism doesn't make the murder of him or his neighbors any less difficult, but it gives us hope for the future of Connor Creek. We only saw how the town behaved when they were at their worst. Ryan saw what they were capable of at their best.
This story might not have the neat and tidy ending we imagined it would, but the events in Connor Creek have irrevocably changed the two of us. And our journey all started by stopping to consider this keychain from Ryan. Utilitarian, often overlooked, made of a sterling silver alloy. Because, as we've learned, silver is rarely found alone. When combined with other metals, it's stronger together, just like the cozy little mountain town it came from. And for now, that's good enough.
Tin Can Brothers presents Wayward Guide for the Untrained Eye. Starring
Mary-Kate Wiles
and
Steve Zaragoza.
Written and directed by Corey Lubowich, Joey Richter, and Brian Rosenthal. Featuring
Titus Macon,
Deborah Lee,
Daniel Strauss,
Cassie Silva,
Joanna Sautamura,
Carlos Valdez,
James Tolbert,
and
Darren Chris.
Original theme music, sound design, and mixing by Ears Up Sound Design. Executive producers Corey Lubowich, Joey Richter, and Brian Rosenthal, Paul Komorowski, and Greg Gibbons and April Morris. Go beyond the podcast and watch new episodes of the Wayward Guide Companion series on YouTube. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information, visit waywardguideshow.com or follow Tin Can Bros on Instagram and Twitter.